Hello and welcome to another episode of the Doster and Deshaun podcast here on the Field of 68 Media Network. It is, at this very moment, Sunday night, January 17th. My name is Rob Doster. The gentleman that you see there with me is the one and only Deshaun Butler. As you can tell, he is a former West Virginia All-American. He always has the West Virginia gear on. Deshaun, how you doing, man? How was your weekend? How's everything?
I am doing well. The weekend was great. Tons of family time. As you already know, mid pandemic. So, me and the kids and the wife had a blast. So we've been just kicking it, bro. Just a good old fashioned weekend here.
That's good because you didn't have any West Virginia games to watch this weekend. So you guys are on a pause. So that means we're going to be able to talk about other teams on this podcast.
Yeah, I know. And I can only imagine how happy certain people are. So I'm dedicating all my time to you guys now.
So this is the Monday Overreactions podcast. We have plenty to talk about because there was plenty that went on this weekend. Michigan got their asses kicked. Virginia kicked some asses. And, of course, there was the Ohio State-Illinois game, and that opened up a whole other can of worms that we got to dive into. But first and foremost, I did just want to talk a little bit about Kentucky and that Auburn game and the way that game kind of played out and the press conference afterwards played out was really interesting to me. And the reason for it is that Coach Cal has kind of tended to be something of an innovator in the college basketball space. And the reason that I say that is, you know, he's the first guy that really kind of embraced this whole one and done model, right? Just put all your chips in the middle on the best class of freshmen, shuttle them off to the NBA, get rid of them as quick as possible, bring the next group of players in, market yourself as the program that is the best at doing that. And then get all of the best players in the country. And, you know, there have been copycats and it hasn't quite worked as well as it has in the past. And there has been some criticism from fans that maybe he cares about a little bit more about getting his guys to the league than he does about getting his players to play their best basketball while they're in Lexington. That's probably, you know, neither here or there for this specific conversation. But I do think it's interesting that a guy that is that creative is still running an offense that is basically out of the 1994 playbook. And that's something that we can get into. The thing that is more interesting, though, and I want to touch on first and foremost, because I have a feeling you played for a coach that would never, ever, ever say anything like this. But one of the big controversies coming out of that game was that Dante Allen led the team in scoring in the first half, played 15 minutes, second half came out, played just 8 minutes, like got pulled in the middle of a rotation because of something. And we can get into that too. But, and afterwards he was asked about it in the post game press conference. And, what he had to say was that, hold on, I want to bring up the exact quote to make sure I don't get this thing wrong.
Yeah, don't misquote him.
He said, "I want to win every game we coach, but the other side of it is I'm not trying to take away anybody's heart." And that is something that has not sat well with many people, fans, media members, critics of Coach Cal overall. So I'm just kind of curious, like when you hear a coach saying that, what does that mean to you? What is he saying right there?
Well, on first hear of it, it kind of sounded like he was trying to compromise. It almost in a sense like he was compromising himself towards the players, which – I mean, when you're the leader of a team, you know, obviously the coach is the head of the snake for this team. You don't want to compromise your team rules, your team goals, your whatever the case is, just for the happiness of the players, because in turn, you're not really helping these younger individuals understand how life works in general. And that's one of the points of being a coach. Also, hearing that another time, I can – and I hate going back and forth on this because, like, the very first time I heard it, I was just like, that just sounds, like, terrible. But then at the same time, if you're trying to teach and you're trying to get these guys to become better players, what can you teach them when you take their confidence away? And, you know, obviously the winning is very important. Some people would say it's the most important thing. The same thing we have the conversation about when we talk about Coach K, and it's just like, all right, maybe he needs to focus on getting these guys ready for next year and have them learn the game and learn what they need to do and learn what they can do within the Duke's off. Same thing for Coach K. We have to extend him Calipari. We have to extend him that same luxury, being that, you know, he can't sit there and if Brandon Boston is like shooting 1 for 4 from three and Mintz is not playing his best or whoever is not playing, Askew's not playing their best. And we know Dante Allen's he can help. And it is about Dante Allen. It is about helping Dante Allen. And you know, he's sat down for a long time as is. So, you know, you think about him, but you also can't. I don't know. It's a tough line, man. It's like one of those lines where you just can't take one of your players' hearts just to focus on the winning. Now they need wins, you know. They're in a position where they need wins. So it's like there's a line there. But if you are trying to help these kids and you are trying to help them become better players, not just worry about them getting to the NBA and worry about their stock or whatever the case may be, but just help them become better players, there's a way you can go about doing it. And you can't compromise yourself as a coach, but you also can't bury a kid and then sit there and go, well, he never turned in anything. And you just sat him on the bench. Mm-hmm. Or you did, like, you know, there's a line. So I can see in that comment that Cal put out there that he's fighting with himself on the inside with that line, trying to figure out how to do this job the best he can in the situation that him and his team is in by staying on that line. So,
yeah, I mean, it's tricky to try to balance that, right? You want to be hard on kids. You want to be able to push them. You want to be able to hold them to a certain standard. But it's also, you know, he's there on the day-to-day, right? Like, he's in that practice. He sees these kids. He's in the locker room with them. And he knows kind of what their mindset is. And the bottom line is this. Like, I think he's referring to guys like Olivier Saar and BJ Boston who have not played well really at all this season. But Cal needs them to be playing well if this team is going to end up reaching their ceiling and being as good as they possibly can be. Now, the question you got to ask at some point is it worth it trying to keep getting the best, like trying to, I don't know if coddle is the right word, but you are kind of coddling. When you say things like this, like you're kind of coddling them, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Cal's whole mantra has been like, Kentucky is not for everybody. If you're going to come here, you got to fight for what you earn. You got to accept the role. If that's what we're asking you to do, you got to do your job or you're just not going to play. Cause that's who we are. But, and then all of a sudden this year, when things are struggling, it's like, okay, well, we got to make sure that these guys are happy. We can't piss them off too much. We got to keep that confidence up. And that, like those two things, it's not congruous. Like you're not, you know what I'm saying? Like they kind of go at what you're trying to accomplish. Right. And so the big thing to me is, at what point do you kind of cut bait on some of these guys and say, all right, look, this isn't working, right? BJ Boston he's nowhere near the guy that we thought he was going to be coming into the season. I think he'll probably leave school after this year, but like, I don't know if he's a first round pick. I don't know, based off of what I've seen, like he's shooting 17% from three. He can't catch. He's a mess defensively. Like why, like, who is going to take a risk on this kid? Like, the whole thing about him coming in was he was this long, lanky, athletic kid that could be switchable, that would be a pest defensively, that also happened to be, like, a really good shot maker and a really good scorer. Well, teams go at him on the defensive end because he's a mess. He's shooting 17% from three. Like, he doesn't have the handle we thought he did. So, like, all the things that we thought he did well, he doesn't do well. So, that's a long way of saying, like, at some point you kind of have to say, okay, well, in order for us to win games, and that's the thing that gets me. It's like, I want to win games, but I want to win every game I coach, but, and that's the surprising part to me is like that. I understand the point that Cal is trying to make, but this is a guy that never, ever slips up in what he's saying. Like,
I would say that was his big mistake. Even if he was trying to figure out a way to compromise or trying to figure out a way to toy that line and coddle in a sense, his words are the issue, like what he's in right now. Mm-hmm. Like everybody has his words to take out of context. So
I want to win, but and so Gary Parrish tells the story from CBS Sports. He was on our Beale Street Bullies podcast with Antonio Anderson, and what he said, like there was one time when he was on a private flight, like he got on a private flight with Coach Cal to fly from Memphis all the way up to Bristol. for when Cal was doing a like a guest spot in studio for with ESPN on like a Tuesday night game. And he said while he was in on the flight, Coach Cal was sitting there rehearsing what he was going to say, talking about like graduation rates and making points about this, that, and the third. And he actually said really like, he's like, I'm going to make sure that I say something nice about Bob Huggins and Cincinnati and their graduation rates and all of these other things. And GP was like, well, did they tell you what questions we're going to ask? And Cal's answer was no, but I'm going to say what I want to say. Like, this dude is the best at spin, the best at getting his message out there, the best at being able to manipulate a press conference to make a point that he's trying to make.
Yeah.
And he fucked this up. Like, there's no other way, right?
If you think he fucked it up, then you're saying that he's this amazing, amazing at, getting his point across. Do you think this is a point he's trying to get across in general? Not to everyone else, maybe to his players, to say, like letting them know, like in a sense that the players that he's talking about without naming them. Like, hey, like,
oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I'm not turning on you in the media. I'm not going to just throw you in. There's obviously a way you can go about that. You can fall on a knife as a sword, but then, then you're the one that's on the knife and people remember that you're on the knife. With him saying these things, it's almost as if like, hey, I'm trying to manage this group here. And then obviously to the masses of people listening, like the fans, and then also to the players, like, yeah, I'm not trying to kill these guys. Like I'm trying to manage them. I'm not sure, what I'm saying? Like the wording in which he's using, like if he's this great, like he can spin a good story the way you say he can, then this had to have some serious thought in it. And that's why when you brought up BJ Boston, it just made me think of if he's saying this stuff now and BJ Boston isn't having the greatest season, I mean, then maybe he is extending his Coach K status in a sense where maybe we need to bring this group back next year. Most of the guys that are coming back, let them see what people outside of this locker room think about them as far as NBA career, as far as anything else. And then they'll come back and then be a little bit more motivated to start their season.
That's actually a really interesting point you just made. Maybe what he's trying to say is – maybe he knew, like, if he knew that everybody would pick up on the I want to win every game but line, then maybe he was saying that because BJ Boston would hear it and would realize, like, I want to win every game, but I have to make sure that BJ Boston still has confidence. Can you imagine hearing that as a player?
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing where that could drive a point home. But I wanted to rewind to something. You mentioned finding a way to develop guys that are going to be there for 2 years, right? And focusing on the guys that aren't going to be heading to the professional ranks, like not worrying about a BJ Boston if he's going to be a one and done, or an Isaiah Jackson if he's going to be a one and done, or Olivier Saar if he's going to end up being a guy that goes pro. And that actually brings to a really good point, because I think the biggest issue, the core issue with this Kentucky team, it's not like the Dante Allen thing, right? Because I'm going to say something about that. Like, the reason he got pulled in the second half was because, okay, first of all, Auburn went at him every time defensively. I went back and I watched the second half tape. There were three straight possessions where they went at him and they abused him defensively. He was a train wreck on that end of the floor. It was basically like having me out there. And when you have a guy like Dante Allen, who is such a threat to shoot the ball, his whole job is to run off of screens and be someone that can make threes. And if he's not making them, be someone that manipulates the defense with the threat of making the three. We talk about this with Duncan Robinson, right? The reason Duncan Robinson is such a weapon is because of the way defenses move when he's coming off of screens. That's what Cal wants Dante Allen to be. Now, if Dante Allen is not going to shoot the, like when he's wide open, that's the other part about it. Like, exactly. I found the play that Cal was talking about where he was pissed that Dante Allen didn't shoot. And Dante Allen came off an elevator screen and had 8 feet of space, like eight feet of space in front of him from 22 feet away, wide open, a play called for him. He has to shoot that.
And if you don't shoot it, why are you out there?
Yes. Because he can't do anything else well enough to be on the floor.
Exactly.
Like, he ain't 3 and D. Like, he's 3 and nothing else. So if you're not shooting, and it's actually, we mentioned Duncan Robinson, like he's talked about this at length. Like, one of the hardest things for him was to be able to get his mind around this idea that, okay, I'm Duncan Robinson. I started at a D3 school. Now I'm out here on the same roster, on the same court with like Dwayne Wade and Bam Adebayo and all of like Goran Dragic, like all stars.
Exactly.
And they want me to shoot every time I touch it. Like, what is going on? So it took him a while to get in that mindset. And like, honestly, Dante Allen is basically six games into his college career after listening to the first 6 weeks of the season where Cal basically said he wasn't good enough to play. So I understand if Dante Allen is kind of like working through some confidence stuff and understanding like, okay, the least selfish thing that I can do as a basketball player right now is to shoot that shot every time I get it. So I understand if he's dealing with some of that. So I just wanted to put that out there. But the core issue that Kentucky is dealing with is that they do not play a modern style. They just don't. We talked about this before. You can't play Olivier Saar with Isaiah Jackson. You can't play Olivier Saar with Lance Ware. You can't play Lance Ware with Isaiah Jackson. You can't play two bigs that are basically fives defensively in an era where everybody is four out or five out, where everybody is spaced. And Cal has not made that adjustment. He has not gone to a lineup where, okay, we're going to focus on shooting threes because we don't have bigs that can be as dominant as Karl Anthony Towns or DeMarcus Cousins in the paint. And he hasn't made that adjustment. Now, let me ask you this. If you could take a lineup where you put Devin Askew at the one, Damian Mintz at the two, you gave me Dante Allen at the three, Jacob Toppin at the four, Keon Brooks at the five, right? And then kind of rotated in like Lance Ware at the five and kind of moved your lineups around that way. But focused everything on going five out, super small, letting Keon Brooks play the five, try to create mismatches, get all your ball handlers and shooters and scorers on the floor together. That will match up better with a lot of these teams like an Auburn, Alabama. And it will also give these players that are going to be back for another year, Allen, Toppin, Askew, maybe if you're lucky, even like a Isaiah Jackson. Maybe if you're lucky, Davion Mintz will decide like, hey, you know what? I'm not going to the NBA. I might as well use that last year of eligibility because this year doesn't count. Like, to me, not only is that like a modern lineup, but you're developing guys that are going to be there for 2 years. So I just honestly, that's what I would do if I was Cal. You're 4-8. The fuck you got to lose?
I mean, for this season, I kind of understand your point. I feel if he can put Cam Brooks at a four spot, that'll even make it a little bit better. He's not going to stray away from what his offense is. I mean, it's too late to change anything at this point now. These guys are getting accustomed to it. But if he could get some aspect of a four man that can step out and guard another four. Like the fours that are out there and other teams, like it's not even obviously offensively their bigs are going to give you what they're going to give you. But the issue is like them not being able to defend. Like they're not as versatile as they could possibly be one through four. And it creates mismatches at four spots from time to time. They get beat in transition a ton of the time. And they're not, and then you add the fact that they're not scoring the basketball or they're turning the ball over every other, like it just doesn't suit well. The way his offense is run, he obviously needs to go out and recruit people that fit the offense a little bit better offensively for them to score in these positions. Because the offense is literally like tailored for bigs to score the basketball. And then if they can't, obviously coming off of staggers and so like they have plays to get shooters the ball, but it's the way this team is kind of put together and how it started, it's just not working right now.
It's not working right now. All right. So I think that's enough about Kentucky. There's a lot of things going on there. And Coach Cal like he's right about some things. He's wrong about some things. I think it's getting a little overblown, but the biggest issue is like, he ain't winning. And if you ain't winning and you're worried about getting guys to the league, like Kentucky fans are not going to like that. All right. Before we get into the overreactions, I do want to just let you guys know that today's episode is presented by Front Office Sports, the leading publication covering the business of sports. Here on Doster and Deshaun, we mostly discuss the action on the court. But if you want to know more about the multi-billion-dollar industry that is driving college basketball and college football, Front Office Sports is your go-to source. FOS College is a free weekly newsletter that cuts through the noise and brings you originally reported stories on the business behind college athletics. With an audience that includes everyone from Division I athletic directors to diehard fans, FOS College has you covered with the stories behind the March Madness bubble, the latest on name, image, likeness rules, TV and media rights deals, and much, much more. So visit frontofficesports.com for the biggest stories on the business of sports and subscribe to the weekly FOS College newsletter or their daily newsletter covering the entire sports industry by navigating to the newsletters page on the site. I'll also include a link in the show notes below. Deshaun. All right. My first overreaction. Michigan losing by 18 at Minnesota is proof positive that we were right not to put them into the same tier as Baylor and as Gonzaga in terms of being the best teams in the country and the favorites to win a national title.
I would disagree on the fact that it's one game. And not to mention, they just beat the crap out of that team by 30 the week before. So if it was a week, what is it, like almost like a week and a half? They just beat mm-hmm. them at their gym. Now, it does show some alarming things about them on the road. It's small, but even then they've won road games too. So, like, we haven't had a big sample size of Michigan just losing to even figure out if this is even a problem. Like, it's one game. And they lost to the first time they played Minnesota, like, had no help for Marcus Carr. And this game, Marcus Carr passed a little bit more in the second half, and guys made some shots, and they extended that lead and ended up winning the game. I mean, I can't knock Michigan for them shooting poorly and having a poor shooting night on the road against who we are talking about, like Marcus Carr and his team. Marcus Carr is like a first team All-American at the point. I mean, yep. You know what I'm saying? So I can't knock Michigan for that.
I don't mean to laugh, man, but Dick Vitale just tweeted. He just tweeted, "Lorraine, give me some Pepto-Bismol." And Pepto-Bismol was in all caps.
Why? What is he doing?
I'm assuming he's tweeted live tweeting the Bucks game or something like that.
His phone just like heard him talk and then this like voice recognition text.
Lorraine, give me some Pepto-Bismol. Oh man.
Shout out to Dickie V for attempting to use social media. I love it.
Oh man, I love Dickie V.
He's the man.
Look, man. Can I go on my Dickie V rant real quick?
Go ahead. Anytime someone says anything negative about Dickie V, I always see you say something. So
I am not here. I will not allow any Dickie V slander on my Twitter timeline.
I have a funny Dickie V story. So okay, it's like,
go ahead. Tell
one
it.
Of,
first, tell
one
it
of
is it funnier than him tweeting, "Lorraine, give me some Pepto-Bismol"?
I wouldn't say that. It's close though. But friggin', I show up to West Virginia on a visit and I'm talking to our trainer and he goes, "Yeah, Dick Vitale was just here last week because they played LSU. This is when they had like Taz Mitchell and friggin' everybody. They're amazing." And he's like, "Yeah, Dick Vitale came up to me and with the camera in my face and the microphone in his hand was just asking me questions. Like, how do you know who's going to do this? How do you know who's going to do that?" And our trainer was sitting there like looking at him. He's like, "Why are you asking me these questions?" And he goes, "You're John Beilein, right?" he mistook our trainer for John Beilein. We always laugh with our trainer about it. He's like, "Dick, if we knew who I was," like, basically. We love Dick.
Oh man,
love Vito.
Yeah, I will not tolerate any Dickie V slander ever on my timeline. Just because of everything that he does, and like he's raised like hundreds of millions of dollars to fight cancer and all the stuff that he stands for. Might it be time for him to be taken off of some of ESPN's biggest games? I'll just put it like this. It's very weird to me when Fran Fraschilla is not calling the biggest Big 12 game of the day, right? But like you can never say anything bad about Dickie V to me. I will not allow it. I won't allow it, Deshaun.
He's a staple. He's a staple, man.
He's a legend in the game.
Exactly.
He helped make college basketball what it is.
You can't do that.
No Dickie V slander allowed. All right. So Michigan. So for me, it kind of highlighted some of the concerns that we do have and that we have had all season long. I do think it needs to be put into the context of Eli Brooks was not playing. And Eli Brooks is like a good kind of connected piece. Like he's a shooter. He's a really good on ball defender. He was probably the guy that would have gotten the heavy load guarding Marcus Carr.
Yeah.
But like, he's not an 18 point difference, right? He's not why they got run out of the gym.
No, it has nothing to do with that.
I just think it's that like Minnesota came up with a game plan and it completely flustered and completely took Michigan out of everything they wanted to do. Hunter Dickinson played his worst game of the season by far. Like, he just kept getting double teamed. He had no idea what to do. I think he ended up with 6 turnovers. As a team, Michigan had 20 turnovers. Mike Smith finished with 10 assists, but didn't make a shot the whole game.
Exactly.
Michigan as a team couldn't really make shots. So like, to me, and here's the reason why I think that there's a level of difference between Michigan and Baylor and Gonzaga is that Gonzaga played horribly at St. Mary's. Like, it was by far the worst game that they've played this season and not even close. Like, Jalen Suggs had a good 3-minute stretch at the start of the second half. And beyond that, like, he looked clueless. He looked absolutely clueless out there for most of the game. They weren't really making all that many shots. Corey Kispert was fine. Andrew Nembhard was okay. Drew Timmy could never really assert himself, and they couldn't really get the ball to him all that much. St. Mary's completely dominated the pace of the game. Mm-hmm. And Gonzaga still won by 14. They would have covered if Umar Ballo had finished dunk at the end of the game, like on the last possession. So Baylor, right? They didn't play all that well. Jared Butler didn't score until there were 5 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
Texas Tech, like, really got it going offensively in the second half. And Baylor still won by 8 on the road at Texas Tech in Lubbock, where there were probably like 4,000 fans in that arena because it was kind of
wild. It was packed.
So those two teams played poorly and still won on the road against some of their toughest competition in conference play. Michigan on the road played bad against like a – there's no slight on Minnesota, but probably like not a top 5 team in the Big Ten and got run out of the gym by 18. Now, does that say a little bit about the difference between the Big Ten and the WCC? Sure, of course, obviously. That's not the point that I'm trying to make. But it does kind of show you that the floor for what these other two teams are is much, much higher than the floor for what this Michigan team is when things go bad for them.
I guess I could say I disagree in that scenario, because once again, you brought the point up toward the end of that. Yes, the competition in the Big 12 and the Big 10 is completely different from the competition in the WCC. And even though Gonzaga played as bad as you said they did, they still, as far as talent-wise, as far as coaching-wise, they have everything, and they still won the game by 14 points. So Gonzaga is in a place of their own, so I'm going to say Gonzaga to the left in there. And you talk about Baylor and Texas Tech, also both ranked teams, similar to Michigan and Minnesota. But, like, that first half, like, I mean, honestly, for the game, Texas Tech, they had a better second half, but it was just an ugly basketball game. They didn't shoot the ball well. The only reason they stayed in the game is because they offensive rebounded the ball well. They played pretty solid defense. They were scrappy, and they kind of – and obviously, Butler didn't shoot the ball really well. They didn't really get much offense other than Davion Mitchell, and obviously Flagler and Maceo Teague play well. It was just an ugly game. So, and it had nothing to do with how well Texas Tech played. I kind of feel like it was more or less like Baylor didn't make many shots, and the game was close because of that. I mean, Baylor did what they were supposed to do defensively. Texas Tech only scored 60 points. So they did what Baylor normally does. They just didn't score the ball. So I look at Michigan, them losing this game to a Minnesota team they just played a week before. And if you notice, like, it's not easy to beat a team 2 times or 3 times in the same year, especially within a week, a week turnaround. Like, they probably watched this game, like, after they got destroyed at their gym, they probably watched this game, even though they had other games to prep for, they probably watched this game over and over, like, 2 days before this game played. Like, they knew exactly what Michigan was going to do. It was going to be a quick turnaround. And, you know, they did what they were supposed to do. They shot the ball great. Michigan did not, as opposed to the first game, Hunter Dickinson didn't have a great game. The first game, he had like 30 almost. Like, at the end of the day, it's nothing to really worry about, I feel, because it's against a team that's on the up as far as Minnesota is. Michigan is still a team I feel like is that's on the up. And it's the Big Ten Conference. They're going to run into teams like this all the time. And they're going to have road games as well. And I don't foresee them losing like this when they lose, like when they lose or when they play any other team in the Big Ten. I just can't foresee that happening. Like, as far I mean, as how talented they are.
It definitely was a wake-up call for them, right?
Like, oh, yeah, it was a smack in the mouth. And it's the first one of the year. I mean,
sometimes – You know this, man. Sometimes you need to get, you know, your teeth kicked in once in a while. Especially, like, so I agree with you on all of that. And I do think that, like, Michigan, I'm not saying like they're not a top 10 team. I'm not saying that they can't win the Big Ten. I think that there's a certain tier, right? And I would put Baylor and Gonzaga in a tier of their own. And then after that is a conversation. But for me, the reason why I would not have Michigan there is it's not because they lost the game. It's not because, it's not because I just saw them lose by 18. It's not because Minnesota's not a good team. It's twofold. One, Michigan kind of like runs their offense through a low post five. And that, like, Hunter Dickinson is awesome, but there are some limitations that can happen. And Minnesota proved what those are. Like, if you throw a double team at him, then he doesn't really know what to do. Sure. So it'll be very interesting to see if now that that's on film and teams have seen that, if that's something that they're going to do over and over and over again. And if that kind of limits what Hunter Dickinson can be as an offensive weapon, it's a little bit problematic. The other part of it is the two best backcourts in the country are Gonzaga's and Baylor's. And I don't think that it's close at all. Gonzaga has the potential number one pick. Andrew Nembhard, who started at Florida, and Joel Ayayi, who is going to probably end up playing in the NBA. I'm convinced of it at this point. Like, he's so good. While Baylor has Jared Butler, first-team All-American, Davion Mitchell, who's going to end up playing, like, he'll probably be a second-round pick, Adam Flagler, who has come out of nowhere to be one of the best shooters that you'll find, Macy Oteague, who is just, like, an all-around, just solid two guard in college basketball. Like, I love
start,
that dude.
He'll start anywhere else. He could start in anyone else's team.
Yeah, I love his like his like mid range off the glass game.
Yeah,
like, and it, like, he's got the ugliest jumper I've ever seen in my life. Like, there's the biggest hitch I've ever seen in a shooting stroke. Macy Oteague has, and hit like he still makes the shots, man. Like, I love that dude's game. And yeah, like Matthew Meyer is just a 6'9" chucker. Like, they've great guards.
Yeah, they do.
Gonzaga has great guards, and Michigan doesn't. They got good guards. Eli Brooks is a good piece. Mike Smith is, for the most part, been really, really, really good this year. But there's a difference between what those other guys got and what Michigan's got. And for me, like, college basketball is a guards game, man. You got to have great guards if you're going to be able to go win in March. So that's what kind of sets them apart for me. So let me ask you this. I think we both agree that, like, Gonzaga and Baylor are kind of, like, are you with me that they are the clear-cut top two? Would you put anyone else in, like, their
no,
tier?
No, it's them for now. It's them. I mean, we haven't seen them. But the thing about Baylor that's worrying me is that they're having issues scoring. But besides that, I mean, if they can keep people from scoring, then then they'll be okay.
Yeah, so, like, we kind of knew that was going to end up coming, right? Like, there's no way Davion Mitchell was going to shoot 60% from three for the whole season.
True.
All right. So, for me, in that next tier of teams – this is who I would have. I'd put Iowa there. I'd put Villanova there. I'd put Michigan there. This isn't in the order. I'm just
thinking of some teams. Yeah.
I'd put Tennessee there, and I'd put Texas there. And I think that is it in terms of who I would have in that next tier. Would you add anybody else?
I'd probably take Tennessee out and put Kansas there. And, like, I would say Kansas. I was saying Illinois before, but it's tough right now for them. I still think talent-wise, they and the way the team is situated, they can be in that tier as well. It's just that they keep getting housed. I keep losing games. And so, and then it doesn't seem like guys are making too many adjustments. Well, I wouldn't say they're not making too many adjustments. That's a falsehood. But I would say that they keep finding ways to lose games.
So I would put
Tennessee is good, man. They're good defensively. Like they're not Baylor, but they're versatile. They're almost as versatile. They have a great rim protector in Eves. It's just, I feel like Baylor's offense is way better than Tennessee's offense.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's just like, wow. Like, and that's the way Tennessee's offense, I mean, the way Baylor's offense has looked, it still looks more consistent than Tennessee's. Like, they got, Baylor has guys that can create off the dribble, and other teams do. Like, you, just like you said, this is a guards game in college, for especially now. And I don't see their guards doing much creating to, like, any playmaking, or just to give the team that kind of like relax, we'll take care. Like, you know, there's no settling. Like, they just swing the ball around, so they find a shot, or someone takes a dribble, picks it up, pump fake, step, sidestep, shoot a like mid range, like leaner. It's not the most creative offense.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right on that. You know, but that's why I have them in that next tier. Like, Iowa, we're always going to have questions about what Iowa is defensively.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
I have, like I just mentioned with Michigan, I have questions about a team that runs so much offense through the five that doesn't have great guards. You know, like, we have questions with Tennessee. Like, what happens if you get into a game where someone can hold them down and not allow them to create? If you can't, if they can't score off their sets and they can't score off a transition, who's going to make a play? Is Villanova ever going to play another game?
Play basketball, you know? Game. Yeah, sure.
And then Texas, like, I mean, look, I love Shaka. I can't fully buy into Shaka as it is. Let me ask you this. Of all of the other teams in the country, like whether we're maybe a Wisconsin, an Illinois, a Kansas, an Alabama, like, who do you think is like the closest to cracking that tier? Like, is there, if you had to put money on one more team potentially winning a national title from outside of the seven teams that we just mentioned, who would it end up being? Because I honestly kind of think I might go with Alabama at this point.
I don't know, bro. I'm not going to hold you. You said don't add them in, but I just like Texas's team, just being that they are so big and the bigs are so versatile. Like, I can't see them not creating problems for teams, like whoever they play. Like, I feel like Texas is a team, like the way their team is, as far as athletically, as far as just how big they are, how talented their guards are, how many like role players they have, guys that just know their role. They're not going to do anything else. Some of them just catch and shoot. Great 3-and-D guy. Like, they're just such a versatile team. I feel like if you sat them and had them play against, like, I can't wait to watch them play Baylor. I can't, if you sat them and had them play against Gonzaga, it'll be like, I can't wait to watch that game because of how talented Texas is and what they could, and if they get to the point where their chemistry just linked, like, you see how good they are when they're good.
No, I'm with you. I would have Texas in my second tier.
I could see them like creeping into a spot where they could possibly win a national championship depending on who they play. Like, it's like depending on who they play, but do I think that they could possibly beat a Baylor? Yes, they could beat a Gonzaga. They could beat they could beat these teams, obviously. Like,
yeah, I forgot to mention, I would have them in my second tier. Like, I would have them in that group. So the guy, the reason I like Alabama so much is that, just the way that
I saw that. I love
the way that they attack. I love this mindset of we're going to shoot nothing but threes and layups. I love that they have guys with the ability to get good shots and that understand, like, okay, coach is giving me free reign to shoot whenever I have a good three, but they kind of understand, like, you don't often see them take bad threes. Like, that to me is the most impressive part about it. Is like, for the most part, like, the shots that Alabama is getting are all good shots. They're just getting them quick. And I think that that's very difficult to teach players to do at the college. Like, it's not easy to get a bunch of 19 to 22 year olds where you say you got free reign to shoot as many threes as you want, but you got to make sure they're good shots. Like, there's no way. It's hard to get them to all take good shots, and they shoot them well.
Tons of fun.
Yep, and they'll defend. So they're just, because of the way that they can shoot and the style that they do play, I just think that they're so dangerous, and they can I think they could beat anybody on any given night. Now, they could also lose to anyone on any given. They lost to Stanford by 18 points. So, yeah. I think they're such a threat, and I love watching the play. I wanted to give them a shout out here. The one team that neither of us did mention was Virginia. Virginia won by 35 points against Clemson on Saturday. They put up 85 points and 58 possessions. Deshaun, I'll do the math for you. That is 1.47 points per possession. If you recall, on December 26th, the day after Christmas, when Virginia played Gonzaga, Gonzaga put up 98 points, and everyone was like, oh my gosh, that's the most unbelievable offensive performance I've ever seen. No one ever does that to Virginia. Gonzaga put up 1.42 points per possession there. So Virginia was much more efficient offensively, and they did it against a better defense. Clemson, entering Saturday's game, was the number one defense, according to KenPom's adjusted defensive efficiency metric, which is what the standard for what people use to determine who the best defenses are. So Virginia put up 85 points on 58 possessions against the best defense in college basketball. In the second half, at one point, they made 9 straight threes.
Yeah.
Now, in back-to-back games, they've scored at least 80 points, and they're 27-51 from three in those two games. They're 5-0 in the ACC. They've won 5 games straight since getting blown out by Gonzaga. They're in first place all alone in the conference. Deshaun, is Virginia – well, here, let me phrase it as an overreaction, because that's our bit. You know, you got to commit to the bit.
Gotcha.
Virginia is the best team in the ACC, but they are not a top 15 team in the country, and they would not be a top 5 team if they played in the Big Ten. There's a lot to unpack there. Yeah. I threw a lot at you.
I'm trying to make sure I get everything. I don't believe that they are the best team in ACC. Record-wise shows that they are. So they earned that. So I can't take that away from them. So congrats to them, because they're doing better than I thought they would honestly do. But then if I look at, besides Clemson and their 5-0, they played Notre Dame twice. They play BC and they play Wake Forest, who I watched today, and they are at the bottom of the ACC.
did they start that Carter Wick guy at the point, Wake Forest?
They're talking about him looking like the what's the guy's name, Sean Penn, and what's the movie called with the hair? Fast Times at
I said that Carter, he looked Wick. I said that he looked like Brendan Fraser from Airheads. Remember that movie?
He had a rough one today. He kept attacking the baseline and stepping out of bounds. It was a tough one for him. But
yeah, was a high school seat. Like, he graduated high school. He's 17
years old, bro. He's going to be good. So I'm not going to even slander the young man's name. So
he just needs a haircut.
He needs a haircut and time. He needs time. But what I would say is, they played the bottom of. Besides Clemson, they played the bottom of the ACC, and they won games that they were supposed to win if you go off of what they were ranked initially in the beginning of the season. These are teams they're supposed to beat. This game against Clemson, I won't take that away from them, because they beat a good team. Their coach, Bennett, was just talking about how they got slapped in the mouth and they got their humble pie and they're ready to play good teams and prove how good of a team they are. And they came out and proved it. I mean, they took advantage of the mismatches they had. And this is, like you said, the number one defensive team in the country at the moment. Huff made great passes, man. And he was the actual big problem for them, which is what I thought Huff could do consistently during the year. I remember telling you, first time watching Virginia play, I saw this 7-footer catch the ball, pump fake, because he could shoot. They run at him. He takes a dribble, gets all the way to the basket, takes a dribble, finds people. And because he can make plays like that, it makes their team – that much more dangerous. And then what do you see? You see the team I saw the very first game. Like, they did these things. Cade Clark was getting layups uncontested. Like, they did a lot of stuff, like, as far as backdoor and just knocking down jump shots. They played great. I mean, I kind of felt like this game was more suited for the mismatch that they could, like, take advantage of, though. Like, their offense, it seems like they're starting to get a feel for their offense.
Yes.
The offense that we were talking about, it wasn't working too much too early. They're starting to get a better feel for it. And obviously losing does help that. You see your mistakes and what you could do better. The coach can explain it to you a little bit better. You can see it on film, see the games, see what you need to do right and wrong. I mean, what you've done wrong and what you could do right. So these things help them get to the point where they can play a team like Clemson, who's a really good defensive team and a really good team in general, and just beat them really bad. And then they can shoot the ball. They're a really good team. So once you have to respect three-point shooting and shooting in general, and they space the floor the way they do, you're just leaving the basket open. The paint was free. They're getting backdoor cuts. They're getting layups. Now guys are off, and now they're getting jump shots. And they just picked them apart.
Yeah, so I definitely think part of it is that Virginia is getting better. The one thing that Tony Bennett has proven the ability to do is adapt when he needs to adapt. Like I've talked about it ad nauseum last year, but he went from running basically just the blocker mover.
Yeah.
When he first got there, to the year they won the title, he threw in a ball screen continuity offense because you got Ty Jerome, who plays in the NBA. You got Kyle Guy, NBA player. You got DeAndre Hunter, NBA player. You have all these guys that can space the floor and shoot. Why are you wasting them in a blocker mover when, you know, you might have the best ball screen point guard in the country, Ty Jerome? Yeah. So he implemented a new offense that he wanted to run. He also started that season giving Jack Salt like starts and playing him 20 minutes a game. And by the end of the season, he was playing lineups with Mamadi Diakite at the five, or even Braxton Key at the five, like really mixing it up, going small, changing what he wanted to do to adapt. And it won him a national title. Last year, the same thing kind of happened. Like, he never could really quite figure out the answer, but he kept tinkering and kept tinkering and kept tinkering. And despite the fact that they were like objectively mediocre, they still finished a game out of first place in an okay ACC. Now, this year, what you're seeing is, he tried to go to that five out offense and it didn't work. So he went back, he's doing his blocker mover and ball screen continuity stuff. And he's got some other wrinkles in there, but the change that you're seeing is freshman Reese Beekman is starting now and they're playing Trey Murphy a lot more minutes and they have more shooting on the floor. It takes a little bit of the pressure off of Kihei Clark to do the things that he was being asked to do. And you know, they can survive the fact that Sam Hauser just really hasn't gotten it going the way that we were expecting them to get it going. Yeah, so
true.
Yeah, so all of that is true. All of these guys are getting better, right? And so when you take all those role players kind of figuring out their job and combine it with Kihei, who is just one of the best winners in college basketball, Sam Hauser and Jay Huff, and they're going to get better. But I also think it's important to note, like you said, they really haven't beaten anybody because you got to remember with Clemson, they were just on a pause for 2 weeks. Yes. They didn't start practicing until Wednesday. They didn't practice with their coach until the day before the game. So, like,
I didn't want to lump them in and say the Clemson was nobody. I just knew that the situation wasn't as normal. It wasn't normal. So
like, it's completely understandable that Clemson was not firing on all cylinders. And with Virginia is not the team that you want to play when you're not firing all cylinders. So you combine all of that with the fact that Duke is down. North Carolina is down. Florida State, we're probably about to talk about them in a second, but they're not quite what we necessarily expected them to be. Louisville is still kind of banged up. Virginia Tech and Clemson have looked like the two best teams in the ACC. So when you put that context into this conversation, like, it really shouldn't be all that surprising that Virginia can go out and win the ACC. It doesn't mean that they're as good as like Illinois, who's in fifth place in the Big Ten, or Ohio State, who just won by 15 at Rutgers and should have blown out Illinois at Illinois. So I think that Virginia is probably the favorite at this point to win the ACC. And I also think that it's because the ACC is down and it's not because Virginia's all that great. So let me ask you this. If Virginia's not the best team in the ACC, who is?
Oh, man. Jeez.
I love Florida State this year.
That's what I said. I like the way Florida State played. The way I honestly, the way Florida State played against North Carolina this past weekend, that's the only thing that makes me think that Florida State can be the best team in the ACC, because their team literally stuck to a game plan that everybody, you can say, all right, you need to do this against North Carolina, but not everybody does it. Like, they just sometimes find different ways to win. The game can be played much simpler, and they can win games against a team like North Carolina. For example, they just kept them out of transition. So to keep them out of transition, obviously you have to score the ball, but sometimes you don't. Whatever the case may be, you don't score. But they picked them up full court so they can stop transition offense. And then once they got into the half court, they just play contained defense, saying, North Carolina, you're going to have to shoot threes over us to beat us. We can't let you guys get into the paint. And sometimes Garrison Brooks got some steals and got a couple layups, but for the most part, they did a solid job of just keeping UNC out of the paint and out of transition, and kept them from, like, just so they wouldn't get going. And then they forced them to shoot a lot of jump shots, which in turn you see UNC made more jump shots than they probably made in weeks. And Love looked better than he looked in a little bit, but still, like, it wasn't enough to be a very well coached and very well coached team. And you could just see the differences in how the players just played. It just made me think that Florida State is probably, if not this first best team, like, they're in the top two best teams in the league.
They are so well coached. And yeah. And the example that I'll give you is this. The defense that they play is it's like technically a man-to-man, but they switch everything.
Yes.
Everything. And it's not just like they switch screens. If there's an exchange on the weak side of the floor, they switch that. If guys are running across the court, it's got some like very real like matchup zone principles to it. I don't even know what Leonard Hamilton would call it, but it's just, you have to communicate so well, and you have to be so well drilled to understand like who is moving where, and you have to have a roster full of guys that are just utterly elite team defenders that know when they need to be in help side, that know instinctively who has got that next rotation. And if that guy's got that rotation, then I got to be there to cover for him. And that guy's got to be there to cover for me. And you have to trust that your teammates are going to be able to pick you up in those spots. And like, that's not easy to do, to get guys to that point. So it's just, I love watching them defend, because it's a thing of beauty. Like, not everybody can do what he does. It gets those guys to do on the defensive
at all, man. That discipline alone, man. It was good to see, man. They would switch off the ball where guys are coming off of staggers. They switch, and it almost like kind of kills your like steam a little bit when you come into the ball, because you know they're switching and you're going to your spot. And it was just like guys were slowing down, coming off of screens. They weren't getting into shot. Like it kind of just took them completely out of the game. So
it takes you out of what you want to run offensively. And that's why they do it. Because what it does is it forces you. They basically say, like, we're going to overplay this, and we're not going to let you run the offense that you want to run, because we're not going to let you make the pass here that gets you to initiate it, or the pass here to initiate it, because they know what you're going to do. So they kind of force you to beat them one-on-one. Which is why you see teams like a North Carolina, who does not have great guard play this year, struggle in matchups like that. And I think it's also important to know, like, Scotty Barnes didn't play. Scotty Barnes might be a top 10 pick.
Exactly.
Scotty Barnes didn't play. They use my new favorite player in all of college basketball, Raekwon Gray, a 6'8", 260-pound. Like, he legit, if he decided he wanted to play offensive tackle, like, he probably could be a really good offensive tackle with the way that he can move. They used him at the point. He was switching. He was guarding point guards. He was guarding fives. Like, they are just it's so much fun to watch them. They're so good. And it feels like Leonard Hamilton has a never-ending pipeline of 6'6" athletic dudes that can shoot, block shots, you know, switch on the point guards, handle the ball.
And now I know why he didn't recruit me. I'm still angry. Leonard. Leonard. I was joking. Now, what did you think about Virginia Tech today? actually, I'm tripping. Sorry. What do you think about Virginia Tech in general?
Very well coached. I love watching them run offense. I think that Kevin Aluma's been a pleasant surprise, but I just like, if you're telling me that Virginia Tech is the best team in the ACC, like, there's there's a level of talent that you expect someone that can win a conference like that
to have, exactly,
to have, and they don't have it. And like, maybe Mike Young is as good as Tony Bennett when it comes to coaching teams up. Like maybe he just is that good. And we'll, cause like Tony Bennett, I trust to win, like win a league without, maybe without an NBA player. Like, I don't know if Virginia has an NBA player on it. And he might be able to win a league without a guy that's going to play in the NBA. Well, Jay Huff will probably play in the NBA because when you're 7 foot
and can block shots, yeah, and block shots, like, yeah, you got a chance.
He'll get a contract somewhere. So maybe I'm just like, they don't have a draft pick on that roster, I don't think.
Yeah.
And Tony Bennett, I know, is good enough to win the ACC without having a draft pick on it. I don't know if Mike Young is good enough. He might be, but that's my one thing with them, is there's just like there's a talent ends up being the ultimate differentiator. And I think there's a certain level of talent that Virginia Tech team doesn't have. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think like their guards are really good, but they're not like, BD's not extremely great. Like, they're not good shooters. Like, they don't really stretch the floor. Raffer and BD don't really stretch the floor.
How much would you have loved to play the role that Jalen Cohn plays?
That'd be awesome. He just comes in and guns. He didn't gun today, though. He guns, though. He usually comes in and guns. They had a whole spiel for him on TV today. It's like, it's just like, geez.
Just run off of double screens and fire up threes, man. Like, that's life. That's the dream.
As you see the rim, bro, just put it up. He looked like he was having fun.
If you catch the ball and it feels like leather, let it fly.
When he does it not.
All right, last thing that we can get out of here is that the Ohio State-Illinois game, I just wanted to touch on that. Did you have a chance to see the end?
Like, which part? Like, the finish of the game?
Yeah. So,
more or less.
the reason I ask is Ohio State was up – they were up by, like, 17 in the first half. And they kept it, like, double digits for the whole second half, to the point that I, like, with 2 minutes left, I shut it off. I was like, this shit's over. Like, why am I watching this right now? But – Illinois made a run, and they cut it to 2 with 15 seconds left, and Ohio State had the ball, and there was an inbounds, and it looked pretty clearly like Dwayne Washington stepped out of bounds when he caught the inbounds pass before he was fouled. Mm. They never reviewed it. Maybe they did review it, but they couldn't overturn whatever it was. Like, the whistle didn't blow, and instead of getting the ball on what could have been a turnover, Ohio State got 2 free throws. They hit both of them. There was a missed shot, 2 more free throws. Final score ended up being 87-81. But if they had gotten that ball back, my contention was that all that would have done, yes, it would have helped you win the game, but it would have papered over the cracks of what seems to be like kind of like a budding problem with this Illinois team. That's back-to-back home losses.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is twofold. One, it seems like the secret is out. The way to beat Illinois is do everything you can to force Io to his left hand and do everything you can to make Kofi Coburn guard on the perimeter. Exactly. And if you do those two things, you're probably going to end up beating them. But the other part of it is, and I was having a conversation with someone about this the other day, when you have guys on your team that expected to be in the NBA and expected to go pro and expected to not come back to school, sometimes it can make it difficult to go through tough times, right? Because there's a natural inclination to be like, man, why the fuck am I still here? Why am I in this practice getting yelled at by this coach? I should have been in the league by now. I should have been pro. I should be making paychecks and going and practicing with LeBron or practicing with
Katie
or whatever it is. Like, you know, but it's, you know what I'm saying?
Say.
Like,
yeah, trust me, I hear you. It's easy to say.
I don't know specifically if there's anything going on with I, like, first of all, I, like, his circle is as tight as any, like, nothing gets out about him, right? Not that his family, his people that control the message as well as anybody I've ever seen. Like, it's so, even the coaching staff had no idea what his decision was going to be until like he announced it on Twitter, right? So that he was coming back to school. So like, I don't think there's any way to possibly know if anything's going on, but the fact that they keep getting off to slow starts, the fact that you can kind of see like emotion boiling over. We saw Kofi slam a ball in the Ohio State game. We saw them getting yelled at in the Northwestern game. I just, it feels like something is off with that team. And I'm just kind of wondering, like, did you ever run into that when you were playing, like guys that thought they should be gone and kind of messing things up? It seems like that's the kind of thing that can mess up a locker room and a team and a culture dynamic.
These things can. And it's important that you have upperclassmen, of course. That's always important. But if you don't have those upperclassmen, it's important that the message is the most important thing, because if you're worried about stuff that's going on outside the locker room, more or less, like, oh, I shouldn't be here, we're playing bad, blah, blah, blah. Like, you also got to use that same intellect to say, well, if I can't win games against Ohio State and at home or against Northwest, like what does that say about, like, my talent, in a sense? And it's not even, like, we can't question these guys' talent. It's just more or less, like, there's a responsibility you have being the best players in the team. Like, it is what it is. Like, and I kind of put this more on Io and Kofi and Coach to, like, figure out how to win. Like, that's on those guys to figure out how to win these games. Like, there's nothing anyone else can possibly do about it except those three. I mean, obviously the rest of the team, but you look at the production of how they produce, how they win games. They win it through Io. They win it through Kofi, they win it through Adam Miller, if he's there, like, as far as scoring. Georgie helps a time, but, like, the way they play, they have to show consistency, and then obviously defensively, they got to figure out what they need to do to, like, fix these problems.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not –
that sucks. Like, all that stuff sucks. Like, Kofi can't step outside of the paint. Like, all they did was put E.J. Liddell at the five, bro. And have him step on the perimeter, and he had a field day. And it was like
awesome.
Yeah, I think he had his first two paint points were in the second half. Everything else was mid-range and threes. And it was, all right, cool, we're going to put him at the five, and we're going to make him step out, and now he has to step out. And if he has to – like, it was – at the end of the day, if they don't just make these adjustments and figure out a way to motivate or figure out another way of making these adjustments – they're going to get, like, picked apart the entire season.
Yeah.
Big Ten's too good.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, I realize now after I said all that, like, I kind of slandered, like, Kofi and Io a little bit. But, like, that wasn't my point. Like, as much as this looks like it could be something where there's some kind of, like, chemistry issue, it very well just might be that, like, the Big Ten is this good and this tough. Yeah. And everyone's going to go through it. You know, and
they just got to figure out how to win. From the way they play, I kind of can see, like, by watching the game, and it's only from a fan's point of view, it's just like watching, I don't see any animosity between these guys with one another. I don't see, like, I remember seeing the coach, like, get in Kobe's face, like, talking to him, telling him what he needs to do, and talking to Georgie face to face when they're angry. And it's not like these dudes are, like, demonstrative to their coach, almost, in a sense, like, get off of me, I'm not trying to hear that shit. Or, nah, it's none of that. They show him respect, that they listen. They obviously get frustrated with how things are going. I kind of feel like the chemistry in that sense isn't the problem. I feel like it's more fixing these little problems defensively. And maybe even pointing them out. Maybe that's another thing. Like, who knows? Like, I kind of feel like when I played, if it was my fault, like, someone's just beating me. If we, like, with Hugs, it was like offensive rebounds. He hates giving up offensive rebounds. So if we had a game where Sam Young got, like, three offensive rebounds when I was boxing him out, like, I hated getting called out. Like, it's just like, it made me feel like it's my fault that this is all happening. And obviously the game doesn't work like that, where it's just particularly your fault. It's a group, it's a team effort. But if you certain coach, like a way a coach, like, talks to a player and demonstrates, like, what's going on in the games when they're watching film or when they're practicing, like, you don't want it to be your fault. So maybe that's, like, one of the things they can do is, you know, coach figure out who needs to take some ownership, because these guys are too talented to be losing the games they're losing.
Yeah, like, and that's definitely it. And it also might just be, like, you know, everyone's going to go through this in the Big Ten. Like, maybe Michigan's going to lose two or three, because what's going to happen in that conference is once somebody figures out how to beat you, they're going to keep doing that. And then you got to make that adjustment, and you got to figure out, like, okay, if we can't do this anymore, then how the hell are we going to win games? And it might just be cyclical like that. And it's also like, look, Kofi's what, 20 years old, 21 years old? Io's what, like 22 at the oldest? And like these dudes are in the, like, just had their careers completely upended. Like Io, maybe he should have gone pro, maybe not, whatever it is. Like all of the decisions that he made were completely blown up because of everything going on with the coronavirus and the pandemic and the way that our country and our world is operating right now. So if you're going to tell me like a 21-year-old is having difficulty with the fact that they're losing some games, it's not going as easy for him as he thought, he's looking at the grass is greener and like a guy's playing well to NBA, like, okay, I get it. I would probably be frustrated too. Like that shit isn't, everybody's going through things like that right now. So I totally get it. Like, I'm not trying to slander their character when I say this, but it seems to me like not all the pieces are fitting the way that they should right now. And, you know, Illinois, they got to adjust. Like, you got no other choice than to go out there and figure out what the problem is and figure out an answer.
Sure.
All right, Deshaun, we've been here an hour. It's always a pleasure, man. We will be back. We'll be back at some point this week. Before I let you go, I need a prediction right now. Kansas-Baylor, Monday night. Who wins?
Where's it at?
Baylor.
I can't go against Baylor, man. They had one of their worst games I've ever seen, and they kept a team to 60 points.
I'm with you. All right, guys. We'll be back with you at some point one day this week. We're going to do another late night live stream. You know, because we got to crack those beers on the feed, man. You guys want to drink beers with us? That's what we're going to do. Deshaun, it's always a pleasure, bro.
Same, man.